I wasn't thinking straight.
Seriously? Why are you here?
He stood up, his bulk filling in the doorway.
I was worried about you. That phone call, you sounded scared.
Oh, that.
And frankly, you look like hell.
Who's being nice now?
I just meant you look shaken. What's going on, Mac?
I dropped my shoulders and took a deep breath, suddenly overtaken by a strong urge to throw myself into his big arms. It's the exhaustion talking, I told myself. I'm just looking for a place to land.
Mac,
he said, insistent, his head cocked. I dropped my eyes to the floor, then raised them to his. You'd better come in, I said. Chapter 80. Someone broke in while I was out.
Shit, have you called the police?
I shook my head. No point. Nothing's been taken, and there's no sign of forced entry. No one's going to come over once they hear that. I was waiting for him to ask the obvious question. If there was nothing taken and no sign of forced entry, how could I be sure anyone had broken in? But he surprised me.
What do you think they were after?
He said instead, his voice quiet. I didn't hesitate. The way my things had been moved, the level of professionalism, this had to be about sunlight. They were after the flash drive.
What makes you think that?
Because of something else I haven't told you.
Go on.
I paused, torn between knowing I had to tell him and knowing I shouldn't. You can't repeat this. Right now you're just my friend Jack, not a journalist, got it? He nodded. Say it.
Yes, of course. Now what's going on?
I sucked my lip. He looked away, a spot of pink on each cheek. Handler called last night, said he wanted to come over, that he had something to tell me, but he never showed up.
You didn't say anything about that to me.
He sounded pissed. I couldn't. He was all 007 about it, swore me to secrecy. It was obviously a big deal for him. He was taking a risk.
But he didn't pitch up.
Nope. He was found in his car early this morning. Bullet to the right of his head. Only he was left-handed. He widened his eyes.
Murdered?
I nodded. A professional hit, made to look like suicide. Whoever pulled the trigger knew what they were doing, just like the dickwad who broke in here.
Shit,
he said again, rubbing a hand across his eyes. There's more. The gun used to kill him was signed out of the yard right after Handler phoned me.
Which means...
It wasn't Handler who got it out, despite what the logbook says, and that means...
The execution order came from inside NSY.
I nodded. Someone's prepared to kill to keep sunlight under wraps.
A cover-up,
Jack said, looking at his feet like the answer was written on his size 12s. Aye, I think so. I pressed the lovely Bodie Calder earlier. He knows more than he's letting on, and I think he's being paid to keep his trap shut. A door banged shut downstairs, making me jump. I looked at Jack. His face had gone white. I wasn't the only one on edge tonight.
How far do you think this thing goes?
He said. High enough for him to make a panicked call to me this evening.
What did he say?
Basically warned me off, the implication being I'd be putting myself in danger if I didn't listen.
The same night someone's been in your flat, which means they may very well be back.
Chapter 81.
Right,
said Jack, marching into my living room, rolling up his sleeves.
Right what? I'm going to take a look round.
I've already done that.
Another pair of eyes never hurt anyone.
You're wasting your time. There's no one here.
Maybe not, but I want to make sure they can't pay you another visit while you're asleep.
Look, Wolfie, I appreciate the concern and all that, but I can look after myself.
If I had a quid for every time you've said that.
I laughed. Well, it happens to be true.
Possibly so, but I'd rather not take any chances, if it's all the same to you. Now, let's take a look at these window locks of yours. Christ, Mac! How old are these things?
He checked his watch.
I wonder if Homebase is still open. Isn't it supposed to be 24/7?
Would you stop it, Jack? I'm on the top floor. I don't need new window locks. And I don't need you or anyone else playing the hero. I can take care of myself.
Didn't sound that way on the phone earlier.
I rolled my eyes. I should have known he'd bring that one up. Don't go getting ideas. That was me managing a situation, not asking to be rescued. There was a moment's standoff. I was still cross with myself for letting Harper get to me earlier. It was making me oversensitive. Fine. I sighed dramatically. Take a gander if you must, so long as you know you're doing this for you, not for me.
Of course, he said with one of his cheeky grins. I could have punched him. Maybe we should dial this sunlight thing back, he said as he tested the security chain on my door. Given what happened to Handler, and now this. I mean, hired guns, execution orders, and now a raid on your place. I don't know, Mac. What do you think? Might we be getting into black waters here?
I took a deep breath. He wasn't wrong. More likely than not, churning up the past the way we were could jeopardize our chances of living to see the future. As far as I was concerned, there was no question. If you want to pull out, that's fine, I said. You probably should. But as for me, I'm just getting started. Chapter 82.
If you're in, I'm in, Jack said.
Are you sure? I gave him a hard look. You don't have to do this. We're not playing flight simulator here. People are getting killed.
First, it's not flight simulator, it's X-plane. And second, I meant what I said the other day. If we go down,
we go together. Jack,
Duncan was my best mate. And if there's a chance we could finally get the bastards who killed him...
I pushed him. I had to. What about dialing it back? You were right. This could get nasty. You're a good friend. You don't have anything to prove.
Nor do you.
This isn't about me proving something.
Exactly.
I smiled. Touché. Well, I guess that's sorted then.
One for all and all for one,
he said with one of his eye-lighting grins as he moved on to my burglar alarm sensors. I'd have needed a stepladder to reach it, but a dining chair did him fine. Little and large.
I presume your uninvited guests didn't manage to get hold of the flash drive?
Nope.
Where is it?
Tucked away. I raised an eyebrow and slipped my hand inside my shirt. The pink spots reappeared on his cheeks.
Keeping it down there's not going to stop them getting it.
I'd like to see them try. He laughed.
Seriously, though, it's not ideal.
He paused, thinking.
Maybe I should hang on to it. You're on their radar, but they don't know about me.
I was about to repeat the old chestnut about being able to manage things on my own, then I stopped. I'm perfectly able to handle myself, but that doesn't mean I should risk losing the stick, I thought. It's all we had to tie Duncan to sunlight, and if I was ever going to prove he'd been killed because of it, I'd need to produce the flash drive.
All right, then, I said, turning away and pulling it out of my bra. Here you go. You are driving home.
Yep, Range Rover's parked right outside. I'll zip it up in my inside jacket pocket now.
Quit worrying, Mac. Nothing's going to happen to it.
Outside, there was the sound of glass smashing, followed by the piercing wail of a car alarm. Somehow, it didn't make me feel all that optimistic.
Chapter 83.
Oh, I forgot, Jack said as he wound up his little recce. I got you a present.
He pulled his barber off the chair where he'd dumped it and reached into the front pocket.
I spotted this in foils. Thought you might find it interesting, given our conversation last night.
He handed me a paperback. The Lost Days of Agatha Christie.
You don't give up, do you? I said.
He dragged me to see The Mousetrap at St. Martin's Theatre a while back and wouldn't shut up about the twist afterwards.
No one ever guesses it, he'd said.
I didn't tell him I'd figured out who the perp was 2 minutes after he'd walked onto the stage.
This isn't a novel, it's a true story, he said now. Right on your runway, I reckon.
A book about her writing. That didn't sound like my kind of thing at all.
No, more of a real-life mystery.
How so?
She went missing back in 1926. There was a massive manhunt, thousands of cops, ads in the papers, the works. They even used planes to search for her.
I smiled. Trust him not to leave out the planes.
Her car was found in Guildford. No sign of an accident, but no sign of Christie either. Then, nearly a fortnight later, she turns up at a hotel in Harrogate, hundreds of miles away, registered under a made-up name, with absolutely no idea what she was doing there.
That's weird.
Told you you'd like it, he said, slinging his jacket back over the chair. Mind if I make a quick cuppa for the road? I'm parched.
Help yourself. There's still some of that grasshopper piss you like. You know where I keep it.
You might try going herbal. All that coffee you knocked back isn't good for you.
Thanks for the advice, Dad. But I counterbalance it with wine, so no need to stress. While he got busy in the kitchen, I sifted through the mail I'd picked up on my way in. A phone bill, a dentist's reminder, and an envelope written in handwriting I didn't recognise. I ran my nail along the top and pulled out a sheet of lined A4 paper. The letter was unsigned and penned in a hurry, judging by the letter formation.
I hope this won't be necessary. Think of it as an insurance policy. If we've already spoken, please destroy this as soon as you've read it and show it to nobody. I wasn't going to say anything, but after you called me, I couldn't help thinking, what if the shoe was on the other foot? How would I feel? You deserve answers, although they won't do you any good. This is too big for one person to take on, but maybe the truth will give you some closure at least. I can't spell it out in writing. If this gets intercepted, it could put you at risk, but I will say this. Those bastards are to blame, but no one can touch them, and they know it. There are too many of them. It goes too far up. I've heard about what you do and how good you are at your job. Hopefully you can connect the dots from here.
Jack!
What's wrong?
He hurried through like a giant bear, slopping tea all over the floor. You need to read this, I said, passing him the page. Looks like it's from Handler. He must have posted it right after we spoke. An insurance policy, he says.
Jack made a face.
He knew he was putting himself at risk, I said, but he did it anyway. I made him empathize with me. That's why he got in touch, which means I'm also the reason he was killed.
You can't seriously think that.
I shrugged. My blood had been up ever since that episode in Harper's car. I really didn't know what to think anymore.
Come on, Mac. Handler was a big boy. He made his own choices. You can't go beating yourself up about this.
He read the letter, then stopped, his mouth comic book wide. What?
Those bastards are to blame, but no one can touch them and they know it. You realise that's almost word for word what Dale Redwood wrote in his suicide note?
The bloke who jumped off London Bridge?
Uh-huh, that's not all though. Remember the man I said was found hanging at his bedsit just before he was supposed to give an interview to the Express?
Yes.
contact of mine at the Nick reckons it was murder made to look like suicide. Ring any bells?
Gavin Handler, I said in a whisper. And if you're right, it sounds like whatever sunlight is, it's linked to this Redwood guy.
And more precisely, to these so-called bastards.
Redwood and the other bloke grew up in residential care together, right? The same children's home. Any other connection between them?
If there is, I haven't been able to find one. They've been living on opposite sides of the river for the last 10 years.
What do you know about the care home?
Oak Lodge, Kilburn, run for profit, struggling financially about 15 years ago, but doing okay now.
I pulled my mobile out of my pocket and typed Oak Lodge Children's Home, Kilburn, into the search engine. Looks like it was raided by the police in early October 2 years ago, about a month before Duncan was killed. I expanded the section with my fingers. Doesn't mention why, though.
Let me see.
I passed Jack the phone. He clicked through the links.
Says here a woman called Diana Averis runs the place.
Diana Averis. My spine tingled. What happened to DA? From the flash drive. We looked at each other, both thinking the same thing. Was she the person in Duncan's notes, and if so, how did she fit in with sunlight? Chapter 84. Let's use my laptop, I said, bringing it to life. The screen's bigger. There's got to be more info on this Averis woman. Jack hung over my shoulder as I sat at my desk searching. The room was dimly lit. The blue light from the computer cast an eerie glow.
Click on that. Children's home manager released without charge, he said, jabbing his finger at the screen.
It was an archived article from the Kilburn Times website, local paper, local interest.
Diana Averis, manager of Oak Lodge Children's Home in North London, which was raided by police earlier this week, has been released without charge after the deputy police commissioner apparently intervened. Ms. Averis, 46, who has been running the residential unit for the last 15 years, was held in custody for 3 days before being let go. Oak Lodge has been the subject of a Scotland Yard inquiry. However, detectives have declined to comment about the nature of the investigation, whether there would be any more arrests, or if any other children's homes were under scrutiny.
What do you make of that?
Jack said, stepping back. Bit odd. She was held for 3 days. The SIO would have had to get a special extension for that, which means they had good reason to hold her. So, why let her go? I leaned back in my chair, running my hand through my hair. Perhaps Dunk was wondering the same thing. What happened to DA?
Could be.
Why did the deputy commissioner get involved, though? It doesn't make sense.
Perhaps Diana can tell us.
He reached for his jacket.
I'll give her a buzz in the morning. Say it's linked to the story I'm doing on Redwood and his friend. See what she has to say.
He pulled his phone out and started tapping.
What the?
I made a face. What?
Diana Averis snuffed it 2 years ago.
Not another one.
Local paper reported that she died of an insulin overdose less than a week after being released from police custody. But get this. She wasn't diabetic.
Our eyes locked. If she wasn't diabetic, why was she taking insulin? Chapter 85. I'll look into it tomorrow, I said. Who knows, maybe there's a good reason a non-diabetic would take insulin. It wasn't time to wave the holiday flag, but if I thought about all this for a second longer, my brain was going to combust.
Sounds good, said Jack, shrugging on his barber.
Part of the collar was turned in. I had an impulse to reach up and untuck it. I shoved my hands in my back pockets before I did anything stupid. People make bad decisions when they're tired. It's what we count on when we haul them in for interrogation in the middle of the night. Halfway to the door, Jack stopped. We were standing very close, a finger space apart. I couldn't retreat. My back was against the wall. He lowered his eyes to meet mine. My heart began to thump.
Look, Ziba,
he said, his voice soft.
There's something I need to tell you. I've been putting it off, but I can't any longer.
On the wall, just to his left, there was a framed photo of a giraffe poking its head through a restaurant window, licking its lips with its long black tongue. Duncan and I bought it from a local gallery together, not long after we were married.
It's like something out of a Judith Carr book, he said at the time. The giraffe who came to tea.
My husband was dead. Jack was here. The pull was strong, but I couldn't be with him. It would be wrong. I'm shattered. Can we speak tomorrow?
Okay, sure.
He looked disappointed, but I'd done the right thing. The spoken words like a spent bullet. You can't take it back. You got the flash drive? I said as he opened the door.
In my jacket pocket.
He tapped his chest with the flat of his hand. Okay. Drive carefully. I yawned again. I was going to crawl straight into bed and sleep like the dead. Today, Saturday. Chapter 86. Bloomfield Villas, London, 0102. I lay in bed utterly exhausted, and yet the sleep I craved wouldn't come. I read the book Jack had given me for a bit, trying to get my mind to shut down, but when I finally turned off the light, I was every bit as wired as before. I tossed and turned for a while, before giving up and reaching for my mobile. Maybe if I got some answers, my brain would let me rest. I tried several variations of the same query. Who takes insulin apart from diabetics? Reasons to take insulin if you're not a diabetic. Insulin, who takes it? But whatever search terms I entered, the same answer popped up each time. Insulin is a hormone which helps our bodies use glucose for energy. People with type 1 diabetes and some people with type 2 diabetes have to take it to control their blood sugar levels. There was plenty of information, but nothing about why a non-diabetic would take it. I scrolled through the pages, eyes glazing over, when a sponsored listing on the side of the page jumped out at me. Best glucose monitors, popular brands. Best monitors, discounts up to 70%. Compare and save. Above the ad was a picture of a device similar to the grey gizmo I'd seen Watkiss fiddling about with in the cafeteria earlier. Was he diabetic? I went onto YouTube and looked up how to test blood sugar levels. There was a demo by a faceless man in a black t-shirt who went through the process step by step, stressing the importance of hand hygiene and the need to monitor glucose before eating so you know how much insulin to take. Insulin. I thought, waking up fast. Although Kurt Watkiss had taken a less surgical approach than the guy on the screen, he'd been doing exactly the same thing in the canteen, testing his blood sugar levels, which meant he'd have easy access to insulin and know how to use it. I searched some more. Not taking insulin when you need it can cause brain damage and death. But as the death of Diana Averis had shown, taking it when you don't need to can be fatal too. No way a diabetic like Kurt Watkiss wouldn't know that. Question was, had he acted on it? Did he have a hand in Averis's final roll call? I texted Jack. You're not going to believe what I found. Speak tomorrow. 2 minutes later, my mobile buzzed. Jack's name was on the screen. Can we talk in the morning, Wolfie? I was just going to sleep. This isn't Mr. Wolf, said a grave voice at the end of the phone. I'm ringing from St. Mary's Hospital. There's been an accident. Chapter 87. Bloomfield Villas, London, 0145. I don't lose my head when the bombs start dropping, but right now I was jumpier than a noddy in a minefield. The woman on the phone hadn't told me much beyond the fact Jack had been in a car accident and was in a critical condition. Not dead, I kept telling myself. But for how long?
I've got to get to the hospital, I thought, pulling on a roll neck and pair of black jeans, my fingers fumbling with the zip. I need to know what's happened. Damn it! Where are my keys? They weren't in the dish on the radiator where they should have been, or in any of my pockets. My bag, I thought, remembering what had happened when I'd come home last night. My uninvited visitor. I tipped it out, the contents spilling all over the floor. Quicker than rummaging about for the blasted things. I scooped them up, along with my wallet, shoved them in my jacket pocket, and hurried out of the flat, only remembering when I was halfway down the stairs that I hadn't double-locked the front door. Get it together, I thought as I ran up again, two stairs at a time. Outside, I pointed the key fob at my Porsche as I raced towards it, its hazard lights blinking in response, just like Dan Harper's had done earlier. Chucking myself into the driver's seat, I slammed the door and started the engine. It made a puttering sound, then died a death. Of course, the battery. I thumped the steering wheel, tears pricking my eyes. How could I have been so stupid leaving my lights on? What kind of retard does that? And then it hit me. I hadn't left them on. I specifically remembered turning them off. A rodent had been caught in the beam, vanishing as I cut the light. It hadn't been an accident then. Someone was messing with me. Meanwhile, Jack was fighting for his life in a hospital bed. At O City 100 hours, I was unlikely to find anyone to jump-start my car. The tube wasn't running, and fuck knows how long I'd have to wait for a night bus. Maybe the minicab place by the canal, I thought, pulling up the number. Sorry, we don't have any cars available right now. We could get someone to you in about 45 minutes. Another thing that wasn't happening. I dashed back up to my flat to grab my Nikes. There was only one thing for it. I'd have to run.
Chapter 88. St. Mary's Hospital, London. 0210.
It was a single vehicle accident. Witnesses say they saw his car going at least 40 miles an hour on Marylebone Road. Looks like he came off the West Way without decelerating and blew through a red light by Baker Street Station, then another at York Gate.
I'd been introduced to the traffic cop when I'd bowled up at the hospital looking like a sack of smashed arse, panting hard and red in the face.
I'm here about Jack Wolfe,
I'd said, hands planted on the reception desk.
I spoke on the phone to a registrar, Maggie Harris.
The nurse took a year looking up the details on her computer and then led me to a waiting area.
Drivers were leaning on their horns, slamming on their brakes and swerving out of his path, but Mr. Wolfe didn't slow down. If anything, he was gaining speed, said the black rat now. His car started weaving about, careening from side to side as it approached the intersection at Park Crescent. His hand was on the horn, one continuous blast as a pedestrian stepped onto the Pelican Crossing. The car swung away from her, missing her by millimetres, before leaping onto the curb and ploughing headfirst into a lamppost.
He paused and looked up from his black flip pad. My stomach was turning in on itself. My throat had closed up.
The car's a write-off, the copper said, shaking his head. And he'll face charges if he wakes up. It's a miracle he's the only one who got hurt.
I thought about what I'd seen before being taken to speak to the copper. Jack, lying in bed connected up to wires and drips, his face disfigured with cuts and bruises, a bandage over his nose, his eyes sealed shut. Miracle isn't the word I'd have used.
The doctors have tested him for drugs and alcohol. His tox screen came back negative. Can you think of any reason Mr. Wolfe might have been driving so dangerously?
He's a good driver. My voice was quiet. He doesn't even get parking tickets. None of this made sense. If I hadn't seen him for myself, I'd have said there had been an identity mix-up.
Was he under any stress you were aware of?
He was at my flat this evening. He seemed absolutely fine. I ground the heel of my trainers on the squeaky linoleum floor. Bells rang further along the passageway. Ping, 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 and from far away came the sound of a woman crying.
The PC flipped his notebook shut and handed me a card.
Well, if you think of anything.
It was a line I've used plenty of times myself, but I never thought I'd be on the receiving end. Chapter 89. I pulled a hard plastic chair with no lumbar support up close to Jack's bed and held his hand. It was freezing. There was a beige pulse oximeter clipped to his forefinger and a set of screens set up round him.
You idiot,
I whispered.
You could have been killed.
Anger was better than tears, I told myself, but it didn't stop them coming. The doctor I'd just spoken to hadn't ruled out brain damage. Or we might find he has retrograde amnesia. It's not uncommon in patients who've experienced a head trauma. I should also warn you, he could suffer short-term memory problems too, though they should pass in time. If he wakes up. That if again. I dropped my head between my knees. I was nauseous, faint. When Duncan had died, I'd felt stranded, lost in an abyss. But I hadn't been alone, really. Jack had been with me. He sat with me when things were at their worst. He made me get dressed. He brought me food. He took me for long walks by the canal. It was even him who suggested I set up as a profiler.
You've got plenty of contacts at the yard, never mind the training and experience, he'd said one night as I sat curled up on my sofa, wallowing in Merlot.
The SF was out. I was too screwed up to go back to that. Maybe he's right, I'd thought. Maybe I do need a new direction, a change of focus. He was also the one who dragged me out of the pit. He pulled me away from the edge. He saved my life. If he didn't make it, I'd be totally alone. There was no one else. I rubbed my eyes hard until sparks danced behind the lids. Why had I shut him down when he'd tried to speak to me earlier? What was I so afraid of? Was it really so wrong to feel the way I did? Duncan wouldn't have wanted me to spend the rest of my life in a nunnery, nor would he have expected me to. Who knows, maybe he'd even have approved of me ending up with Wolfie.
He's one of the good guys, he used to say, and God knows there aren't enough of them around.
I looked at Jack lying there, his face a paint box of bruises and lacerations, as immobile as Duncan had been at the end. Had I really held back because being with him would have felt disloyal? Or was it something else? Getting together with Jack would mean moving on with my life. It would mean letting go of Duncan and accepting he was gone. I thought Wolfie was the one person I could never be with. But the fact is, he's the only person I could be with. Physical attraction aside, he gets me better than anyone. I can be myself with him. When he walks through the door, I come to life, like a circuit's been connected. When I first saw Duncan addressing the team at Scotland Yard, I couldn't move. His voice, his manner, the way he commanded the room, the guy snared me at first glance. Jack's different. He makes me laugh. He calls me out on my shit. When I'm with him, I'm back in my father's study, chomping sugared almonds and listening to the Tehran Symphony Orchestra on his big old-fashioned gramophone. I'm home. I pride myself on the fact I'm scared of nothing and no one. Wary, maybe. Suspicious, definitely, but not scared. And yet I'd got myself all eaten up with keeping my feelings in check and keeping Wolfie at arm's length. Only two nights ago, he'd sent me that stupid text about fear. It was corny as hell, but true all the same. Only by confronting the things we're afraid of can we discover what we're truly capable of doing. Duncan said something similar once. He was the guest speaker at some police charity dinner. It was a crap evening. I was stuck under an air conditioning unit going full blast. The chicken was rubbery, and the guy I was sat next to was a tedious desk waller with a wind problem. Duncan's speech was good, though.
Do the things you think you can't do, he'd said. Fear's the worst enemy known to man. It stops us being what we could be. It stops the impossible becoming a reality.
He was right, I thought. I shouldn't have run away from my feelings. I should have faced up to them. At the very least, I should have let Jack say what he wanted to say. And now, it might be too late.
You have to wake up, Wolfie, I whispered. You're not allowed to die on me, do you understand?
A red-haired woman in a white lab coat came into the room.
Is he going to be okay?
I said, wiping my eyes on the back of my hand.
We'll know more when he comes round, she said with a papered-on smile. Are you his next of kin?
Yes.
I'd answered on instinct, though unlike me, Jack has a large family. A roly-poly lasagna-cooking mum, a dad with twinkly eyes and a big belly laugh, and three brothers, all with the same messy hair and broad shoulders as Wolfie. I have to call them, I thought. They need to know what's happened. I should have done it sooner, of course, though the hospital obviously hadn't called them either. They'd be here if they had. And if they'd been out of town, his brothers would be standing by, no doubt about it. The Wolfs were close. Jack's parents would be listed in his contacts by their nicknames, Mo and Dee. He doesn't call them Mum and Dad. The doctors wouldn't have known where to find them, but I did.
Do you have his personal effects?
I said to the woman with the clipboard. I'd have to look up their number in his phone.
Give me a minute and I'll get someone to bring them to you, she said, jotting down some last details.
You asked for these? Said an orderly a short time later, handing me a large clear plastic bag with Jack's threads in it and a tag around the top with his name on it. A swell of acid surged up my digestive tract. My nose fizzed. Beige chinos, button-down shirt, round-necked sweater, barber jacket. The things he was wearing only hours ago when he left my flat. And now they were all splattered with blood.
Chapter 90.
I still hadn't opened the bag of clothes. My body felt numb. My veins were filling with sludge, all too familiar signs that the black dog's on the move. Embrace the suck and get on with it, I thought. This call isn't going to make itself. I checked my watch. It was still early dark 30. The second his parents heard the phone ringing at this time of night, they'd know something was wrong. It felt cruel to wake them like this, but it had to be done. If Jack died before I'd spoken to them, they'd never forgive me. And rightly so. I took a deep breath and untied the sack. I took each item out, one by one, and laid them on the table at the end of the bed. Going through his stuff like this felt wrong. It was like he'd already kicked the bucket. Right after my father died, my mother cleared out his side of the wardrobe and boxed up all the clothes that weren't too moth-eaten to give away. The rest went in black plastic bin bags.
We'll take this lot down to Oxfam as soon as we're done, she'd said, sticking them down with brown tape.
I'd thought the British Heart Foundation would have been a better choice, given what had killed him.
Be practical, Ziba. There's an Oxfam shop on the high street. End of discussion, she'd said, snipping the tape with her big Lakeland kitchen scissors.
Practicality has always been very important to my mother. After Duncan was killed, it had taken me months to clear out his things. I'd take a sweater off the shelf and spend the rest of the afternoon with my nose buried in it, imagining I could pick up a lingering scent. In the end, Jack had come over and we'd tackled the job together. I looked at him now, flat on his back, parade rest still. Who looks like hell now, eh? I said, remembering what he'd said to me only hours before. I wiped my eyes on my sleeve, daring him to sit up and tell me to bog off. I sighed and took the last of his things out the bag. Now, where's his phone? I thought. Jacket or trousers? I checked the jacket pockets first. Car keys, a disintegrating tissue, a scrunched-up flyer for an RAF air show at Southport, and a packet of Ricola lozenges. But no phone. Trousers, then. Ah, here we go. I was just scrolling through his contact list when I stopped. What the? My heart did a drum roll. I checked his inside jacket pockets again. I felt about with my fingers. Then I turned them out to be sure. The flash drive he'd put there earlier had gone.
Chapter 91. Someone was killing to protect sunlight, and now Duncan's flash drive had gone missing right after Jack had been in a near-fatal car accident. Those things had to be connected. But no, that didn't make sense, I thought. Like he said, I'm on their radar, but he's not. No one knows he's been looking into this with me. Though, what about what the traffic cop had said? Something was definitely up. Jack had been speeding like a bullet straight out the barrel, running red lights and narrowly missing pedestrians. If I hadn't seen him lying in the hospital bed, strapped up to every device going, I wouldn't have believed it was him. He could work for the DVLA, he's so damn precious about road safety. So why the change? I closed my eyes, picturing the scene as the cop had described it, putting myself in Jack's place. His car started weaving about, careening from side to side as it approached the intersection at Park Crescent. His hand was on the horn, one continuous blast, as a pedestrian stepped onto the Pelican Crossing. The car swung away from her, missing her by millimetres, before leaping onto the curb and ploughing headfirst into a lamppost. Weaving about, careening from side to side, his hand was on the horn. My eyes flew open. Of course, I thought, smashing my fist into my palm. He'd lost control of the car. He couldn't stop it. That's why he was zigzagging about. He was trying to use the air's resistance to slow it down. Someone must have screwed with his brakes. I thought of Gavin Handler and the star-shaped hole in his head. Diana Averis, dead from an insulin overdose, despite the fact she wasn't diabetic. Dale Redwood's friend found hanging in his bedsit hours before he was supposed to meet a reporter. And now Jack. Lucky to be alive, but very possibly brain-damaged after his car ploughed into a lamppost at 40 miles an hour. In all four cases, the MO was the same. Murder made to look like suicide or an accident. And each of the victims had a connection to sunlight. Chapter 92. Donald Isakson.
Custody clocks run out. Not enough evidence to charge Fontaine. Releasing him now.
SMS 0317.
About bloody time, I thought, reading the DI's text. Time that could have been spent hunting the killer.
Zeba, dear,
said Jack's mother, coming into the ward with outstretched arms, her eyes red and puffy.
You must be exhausted. You didn't need to wait for us,
said his father, bringing up the rear. He was wearing odd socks, and his sweater was on back to front. Jack's mother was still wearing her slippers.
I don't understand, she said,
perching on the edge of the bed, gripping Jack's big paw with two hands.
He's such a careful driver, not like his brothers.
I bit my tongue. There was no point upsetting them. Instead, I gave them a brief sit rep and made a move to leave. They needed space.
My number's on here,
I said, pulling a card out of my wallet. Will you call me if there's any news?
Of course, dear. And you want mine? What's my mobile number, Bernie? Can you give it to Zeba?
Just let me look it up.
He pulled an ancient Nokia out of his trouser pocket.
Now go home and get some rest. You look shattered, Jack's mother said, once I'd inputted her contact details.
I didn't need telling twice. On my way out, I called the cop I'd spoken to earlier. There was something I needed him to do for me before anyone else got to it.
This is Zeba McKenzie. We met at St. Mary's Hospital. About Jack Wolfe?
Yes. Hello?
There was a question in his voice. I needed to put this in a way he'd understand. I'm doing some work with Scotland Yard that involves some rather shady characters. I can't go into details, but you should know that Mr. Wolfe's been assisting us, And given what you've told me about the lead-up to the accident, I suspect his brakes may have been tampered with. It would certainly fit with what we've already uncovered with regards to our inquiry and what's at stake.
Oh, right, I see. Gosh.
This was way beyond the scope of a traffic cop. I needed to make it easy for him. Spell it out without telling him what to do. All that would do was get his back up. Any way we can check to see if I'm right?
The car's in the pound. I could arrange to get it looked at in the morning.
Not ideal. We'd already lost the golden hour. That'd be great. The doctor says things are touch and go. This may yet become a homicide investigation. In other words, get your finger out.
Oh, said the copper.
He sounded worried. Good. Given what's at stake, it'll become big news if it turns out his car was messed with.
Perhaps I should get CID involved.
Aye, I said, walking up to the taxi rank outside the hospital. That sounds like a good idea. Time's always of the essence with these things, eh? Especially when you're dealing with people who know how to cover their tracks. Chapter 93. Paddington, London, 0330. I spent the cab ride home in a daze, staring out the window but seeing nothing. I'd been blasé on the phone to the traffic cop when I'd said Jack's accident could turn into a homicide investigation. But it could go that way. And even if he didn't die, he might never be the same again. Who was it who said a person is their memories? There are plenty of mine I wouldn't mind nuking, but not if it meant losing my identity in the process. If Jack didn't remember who he was, did that mean he wouldn't be Jack anymore? The streets passed in a blur, the camera out of focus. All my brain would fix on was the image of Wolfie in the hospital bed, lying there as immobile as Yasmin Pejman on the mortuary slab.
So, do you work there, at St. Mary's then?
Said the driver, looking at me in his rear-view mirror. He had to repeat the question twice before it registered. No.
Visiting someone?
Top marks, genius. Yes.
Friend or relative?
Do you mind if we don't talk?
Difficult time, eh? My grandson had his appendix out a few weeks ago. Appendectomy. Nasty business. Poor kid was in hospital for...
I stopped listening. And at some point he must have noticed and flipped the radio on. The cheesy pop wasn't much of an improvement on his voice. You can pull in just here, I said as we turned down Blomfield Villas.
That'll be 7.50.
I handed him a tenner and jumped out.
Don't you want your...
Keep it.
Much obliged,
he said, smiling from ear to ear. Not a bad tip on a £7 fare. I wasn't being generous, though. I was just too shattered to wait for him to count out the change. Halfway up the steps to the front door, the sound of an engine caught my ear. I turned round in time to see a black four-door saloon pull away from the curb on the other side of the road. Nothing odd about that. What was odd was it didn't have its lights on, and although I couldn't make out the driver's face in the dark, I could see he wasn't looking ahead. Instead, he was looking right at me. Chapter 94. I checked the road when I got upstairs, but the car had gone. My head was so full of sunlight conspiracies, I was seeing intrigues everywhere. Experience has taught me not to ignore my gut, but right then I couldn't trust what my mind was telling me. The driver was probably just surprised to see anyone out and about at this time of night, I thought, flopping into bed and conking out in a London minute. I couldn't have gone under any faster if I'd been hit in the head with a rifle butt. 0800. My alarm smashed through my REMs. It was Saturday, but that meant shit. Fontaine had been released, so the killer was still out there. I had to be at the yard along with everyone else. With Pejman's husband off the hook, the pressure would be on to find a new suspect. I gradually emerged from my coma, my brain doing its utmost to pull me back down, last night erased as if it never happened, but the amnesia didn't last long.
Jack. A swell of nausea undulated through me. I reached for my mobile and checked my messages. Nothing. His parents hadn't called. Was that good or bad? I rang his mother.
Hello?
Her nose sounded blocked. She'd been crying. It's Ziba. How's Jack doing?
He opened his eyes a while ago. He's asleep again now, though. They've booked him in for an MRI. We'll know more after that.
Shall I come over?
Not yet, sweetheart. I'll keep you posted, I promise.
I leaned back against the pillows and was just dozing off again, when a thought yanked me back. I bolted upright, hand clamped to my mouth. Why hadn't I thought of it sooner? For someone to have taken the flash drive out of Jack's pocket, they had to know he had it on him in the first place. And for them to know that... I leapt out of bed and reached for my maglite, shining the torch on every surface, listening for clicking sounds. Was that a noise in the living room? Where was it coming from? I followed the buzzing. Just the DVD player. Static electricity. What a shit fest. Back in the day, I could have done this properly, found what I was looking for in minutes. I closed the curtains and hunted for LED lights. Perhaps I'd get lucky and the microphone's power-on indicator lights wouldn't have been deactivated. Nothing. But I wasn't done yet. I checked the mirrors, hunted for pinhole cameras, tested the sockets. Zilch. It's got to be here. But where? Curtains open, I lay on the sofa, staring up at the ceiling, putting myself in the intruder's skin. Hey, that's new. There was a chip around one of the spotlights. I'd been lying in the same place just before I found the flash drive. The chip definitely hadn't been there then. It's the sort of detail I'd notice. I grabbed Duncan's old stepladder from the kitchen and climbed up, a screwdriver gripped between my teeth. It took me a few tries before I pulled off the surround. And there it was, an audio recorder hiding in the socket. Jesus. Then a beat later. Just how long had these dick beaters been spying on me?
Chapter 95. When you're in the crosshairs, you might catch a glint of light off the sniper's scope, but no way you'll see the whole gun. Odds were, the recorder in my hand wasn't the only device hidden in the flat. This might be a job for Max, I thought, going off to look up the number of an old oppo who'd recently retired from the SF and set up a personal security firm, like so many of us seem to. Word was he specialised in counter-surveillance, a natural fit and just what I needed. These days, spyware has become so sophisticated, small and well-disguised, that without the right gizmos, it's almost impossible to find them. I was scrolling through my contacts list when I stopped. Maybe I was going about this all wrong. I knew someone was keeping tabs on me, but my peeping Tom didn't know I knew, which gave me an advantage. The chance to launch a counter-strike. By stealth. If they heard me giving up on sunlight, they wouldn't see me creeping up behind them with a knife. Here was the operative word. I needed to put on a show. And I'd only have one go to get it right. I pretended to call Jack and leave a voicemail.
Wolfie, it's Ziba,
I said, licking chicken loud and clear. We need to forget about sunlight. There's no one left to talk to and I don't know where else to look. We've given it our best shot. It's over, especially with you in a hospital bed. Hanging up, I went through to the kitchen. There's a limit to how well my brain functions without a morning caffeine fix. The fridge was bare apart from a leathery-looking apple and an out-of-date box of eggs. Lucky I'm not hungry, I thought, reaching for the tin at the back and spooning beans into the grinder. A mix of Kenyan, AA, Colombian and Robusta. I get them delivered fresh to my door every week. Bag coffee isn't worth the pot it's brewed in. The bugs must have been planted by whoever broke in yesterday, I thought, brain processing the audio recorder I'd just found as I clipped a double filter into the espresso machine and let it run. The room filled with a rich, toasty smell. Heaven. I slurped the Kramer off the top and carried my mug into the living room. My laptop was on my desk, same place it had been all day yesterday. Might have been compromised, I thought, taking another suck of lifer juice. Means they could be monitoring my keystrokes and have accessed the hard drive. Just the sort of game I played back in the day. I could still use the laptop, but only to put out false information. My phone was clean, though. It had been in my pocket all day. There's no way someone would have been able to stick their hand in there and get it out in one piece. I rifled through the cupboard, looking for my oldest clothes. Texted Isakson to say I had an emergency appointment with the Fang Fairy and would be in late, then hurried out of the flat. Making bogus calls wasn't the only thing on my to-do list this morning. Chapter 96. Bloomfield Villas, London, 09:30. I scrutinised the street before exiting the building, checking for anyone who might be watching me. An unmarked van, someone loitering on the corner, seemingly busy on his phone, a twitching curtain. Nothing stood out, but what I'd found in my flat showed anything was possible. Keeping an eye out for company, I hightailed it down to the Gap on Clifton Road. It's not my usual style, but it was the nearest clothes shop, and this was a matter of necessity, not fashion. I pushed the door open, the heating hitting me like a glove to the face. I didn't know how far the intruder had gone. He may have just planted his bugs, looked for the flash drive, and left. Or he could have hidden tracking devices in my clothes. Either way, I had to play it safe, which meant ditching my clobber. I picked up a pair of petite plaid trousers that I had to roll over once at the waist to stop them trailing on the floor, a pale blue Oxford shirt, and an extra-extra small black crewneck cardigan. The girl at the till gave me a funny look as I handed over the tags for her to scan, dressed in my preppy new threads.
That'll be 76.81. Do you have a loyalty card?
Nope. I gave her cash. Instinct told me the less traceable I was, the better. A few doors down, I handed the gear I'd come in to a homeless woman. A good deed and a decoy seemed like a fair trade. I took a circuitous route down to the canal, checking around for unwanted company as I went. This'll do nicely, I thought, spotting a bench in an isolated spot where I couldn't be observed or overheard without knowing it. The tech department's number was stored in my phone. It had been on the contacts sheet Isakson had handed out at the start of the case. The DI may be a knob, but he has a few uses, I thought, giving it a ring.
This is Ziba McKenzie, serial homicide, MIT, I said, when a man with a thick northern accent picked up.
I'm in the field and need an address. Could you look someone up for me? Name's Craig Bowden. That's Bravo, Oscar, Delta, Echo, November. Craig Bowden was the only other full name on the flash drive. Hopefully the Yard's advanced computer systems could narrow down who it belonged to.
There are 57 matches. Can you refine the parameters?
That was seven more than I'd come up with 4 days ago. I took a guess based on what Jack and I had found out last night. Cross-match it with Oak Lodge Children's Home, Kilburn, London.
Give me a second while I work my magic. And bam, here we go. Craig Bowden, 23 years old, lived at Oak Lodge Children's Home till the age of 16. Current address, 18 Plender Street, Camden, NW1, ODA.
Time to roll. Chapter 97. Warwick Avenue Tube Station, 10:15. I paused at the top of the escalators, the moving staircase making me think of something out of Dante's Inferno. This was the first time I'd been back to Camden since that business with the London Lacerator. A scavenger hunt across the city, a dead body at the end of the trail.